All right. You're looking at me like I'm a two-headed dragon today.
No.
Oh.
No. What would give you that impression?
I don't know. Just that sometimes you give me that look through the glass that I don't normally get from, from your colleague.
Inscrutable. In a state of constant analysis.
Like now, in other words.
What's going to happen next?
Well, our next guest is now on with us, and I talked about it earlier on. It's very subject very near and dear to your heart, I know, because we've spent time in the outdoors together, so I know this. His name is Scott McDougall Shackleton, and Shackleton, I guess it's pronounced, and he is the director of the Advanced Facility for Avian Research at the University of Western Ontario. And he is a bird expert, obviously. No question about that. At the facility, Scott and his team study physiology and behavior of birds, which is very cool. And so joining us this morning to talk about that and I'm sure other things is Scott. Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Yeah, good morning to you, Angelo.
Thanks for joining us. By the way, where are you calling from or where am I calling you from?
I'm calling from home in beautiful London, Ontario. Well, we got some fresh snow this morning.
What's the temperature there?
Yeah, it's just about -5, I think.
Oh, okay. So that's balmy. Yeah. That's balmy. The Minister of Natural Resources up in Pembroke said it's -29 where he is in Pembroke. So.
Yeah, well, Southwest Ontario is the tropics of Canada, right?
That's for sure. That's for sure. All right. Tell us, I am going to go into a break here in about a minute, but tell us a little bit about the facility itself.
Yeah, well, it's a it really is a world-leading facility. It's about a 20,000 square foot building where we study a whole range of wild bird species, everything from basic science on how they find food to kind of more applied topics like how does oil contamination affect the bird's ability to fly, or things like mercury contamination affect their health. So, a whole range of detailed experiments we can do there.
20,000 feet, that's massive. That's one heck of a bird aviary, I'll tell you that.
In the world.
No kidding. And that's in London, right?
Yeah, it's right on Western University's campus.
Okay,
So we've got about eight professors and all their students working in there on different topics.
There's a million questions I need to ask you, but we have to do some selling. We have to pay some bills now. So sit tight with us, Scott. More journal after this. Don't you dare go away.
Hey, want to learn more about the last great fishing frontier? Then look no further than FishingCanada.com.
Oh, buddy, that's a tank.
The biggest and most comprehensive website dedicated exclusively to, you guessed it, fishing in Canada. Videos, blogs, how-tos, and GPS waypoints to some of Canada's best fishing hotspots and much, much more. We'll even show you how to prepare a world-famous Canadian shore lunch. If you love fishing, then you'll love FishingCanada.com.
Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, I'm Angelo Biola. He is Michael Mooring, sitting in for Stephen Labadie, who will be back next week, I'm told. And Derek Mandea and Jessica Ellis, who will be gone forever. She's leaving after the show.
Forever. It's permanent vacation.
Wow. On the line with us is Scott McDougall Shackleton, Director, Advanced Facility for Avian Research, University of Western Ontario in London. And as he told us just before the break, it's a state-of-the-art facility, about 20,000 square feet, that and is dedicated to studying birds. You know, they get provides knowledge about birds and how they adapt to their environment. Joining us now, hopefully still online with us, is Scott. You there, Scott?
Yeah, I sure am.
Okay, so we know that now this is a state-of-the-art building. I'm assuming that there are similar facilities somewhere else on the planet, or is this a one-of?
Well, you know, there are some other research centers where people study birds, but the combination of equipment we have doesn't actually exist anywhere else. So,
wow.
The real thing that sets us apart is we have a wind tunnel that we can fly birds in and actually send them up to 7 kilometers altitude. And so that's the only bird wind tunnel in the world that can do that.
7 kilometers?
Yeah, so almost the top of Everest, but not quite.
How do you do that?
Well, it's a closed steel wind tunnel, so when the birds are flying in it, it's hooked up to chillers and vacuum pumps, and we can control the air pressure the humidity and the temperature to simulate what they would experience when they're flying at altitude, even though they're flying in the ground level.
Wow. See, I'd find that fascinating. I'd love to see that. Mm-hmm. That is very cool. Now, are you working?
Amazing when you think.
Go ahead. Go ahead, sorry.
I said, it's amazing when you think birds are flying that high. There's low oxygen, it's cold temperature, and yet they're flying away doing high-intensity exercise.
Yeah, it boggles your mind for sure. Now, are you working with native species, you know, Ontario or Canada, or are these birds from all over the world?
Mostly local birds. We do most of our work on songbirds, warblers, sparrows, chickadees, but we do some shorebirds like sanderlings and, you know, we've had western sandpipers.
Okay. And what is, first of all, how long has the facility been operational?
Yeah, well, we've just in our 10th year now, so we're hitting our stride.
Okay. And what have you learned in that 10-year period? That we should know about that you know what are the things that made you say wow I did not realize that
yeah well we've done so many different topics but one that sticks out to me is we did a large project examining the effects of oil contamination and you know when you see pictures of birds being totally doused in an oil spill you say well that's bad for the bird for sure
right
but what we found is even just a spot of oil on their wing feathers. It costs them 25% more energy to fly the same distance. And so, you know, historically, we wouldn't even count those birds as being affected by an oil spill. But now we know even just a small blotch of oil on their wing, it wrecks their aerodynamics and is going to probably have an impact on whether they're going to survive or not.
Wow. Wow. And, of course, obviously that information is being used in areas, you know, that would be potential hazard areas for birds. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's excellent. Now, are you raising birds there? Or are these, you know, wild birds that you bring in for the research and study and then release back into the environment? Or how does it work? Like, do you have your own? I guess what I'm asking is, I know how mice and labs sort of are connected, but how are birds in your facility connected?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, we sometimes work with domesticated species that will breed in captivity, but for the most part, these are wild birds, so we spend a lot of time out in the field catching them. And whenever possible, we release them after the study. We spend a lot of time doing field work, so... And the great thing is sometimes you don't even have to bring them into the facility. We can go and study them in the wild, which is always our goal.
I had an opportunity to go to your site, and one of the things that struck me is the most interesting, believe it or not, is the point that you make about how birds learn to sing. You know, we just take it for granted, right? A robin sounds like a robin and a sparrow sounds like a sparrow, but how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it is amazing. You know, vocal learning in mammals is pretty rare. We humans do it. We learn to speak when we're young. But songbirds, parrots, and hummingbirds, they all learn to produce their own sounds just in a very similar way to we do. They need to hear their adults making noises when they're little, and they learn those sounds. And so if they're raised by the wrong species somehow, they'll sing something that's they can't communicate properly.
In terms of flight and behavior of birds and how they use their anatomy to, I guess, you know, in some cases, birds, you said birds flying as high as Mount Everest. But owls have always intrigued me. When I was a kid, I would often spend a lot of time by myself in the woods. And it always intrigued me on owls, how quiet they were when they flew. Every other bird I can almost identify by the sound of their flight. Owls... Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, don't make any sound. How in the world do they do that?
Yeah, that's a lot of people would like to know the answer to that question. You know, of course, they don't make sound, so their prey don't hear them coming. But that's an active area of research. Their feathers have some different kind of coating on them that's thought to perhaps contribute to reducing that sound that most feathers would make when they're flapping. And there's some people who think it's the sound of flapping is actually the feathers sliding across each other. You know, when a bird flaps, its wings don't just stay in one position. They slide back and forth. And owls somehow are able to not make that. So we've been doing a little bit of research on that.
Wow.
We actually had a collaboration with the African Lion Safari in in down in southwestern Ontario here, brought some owls in and flew them in our wind tunnel.
Oh, cool. Cool. I guess about a month ago, we reported on this program, but it's a story that's been building for about a year or two. The fact that there could be as many as a billion birds missing from our mm-hmm. inventory, globally speaking. What's your position on that?
Yeah, no, that's it's very clear. You know, some birds are doing fine. There's some birds that are as populous as they ever were, but there's a lot in big trouble. The grassland songbirds, aerial insectivores, things like swallows and martins. So there are some birds that are really declining. It's due to a variety of causes. You know, the way we change our land use, the way we affect where they stop on migration. You know, one thing that a lot of people don't like to hear it, but it's becoming very clear now that our pets, our household cats, are probably causing a lot of the damage.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, a lot of people think that birds are going to be killed by, you know, flying into wind turbines and things like that, but many, many more birds are killed by cats than any other human cause.
I find that totally, I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked because you know why? Because you really don't see it that often, right? You mm-hmm. don't have any visual evidence of that taking place. But yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, the more pets, the more cats in particular, and I'm sure dogs too, but the more mm-hmm. pets that we put on the planet, I guess, yeah, that would affect the bird population.
These outside cats wandering around, they're really good at hunting.
Anything that is there anything that can be done about that? Like, is there something that maybe a pet owner can do to keep their cat from
attacking? There's a variety of devices people are putting on their cats to try and stop them from killing birds. But really, the best thing to do is to make them an indoor cat. And that's, you know, that's a long culture change if you're used to letting your cats outside. It's, you know, when you think about it, it used to be people let their dogs run around the streets, you know, 100 years ago. And now we've moved. If you let your dog run around the street, people would think you're a crazy person. maybe we'll get there with cats too.
That's very interesting. Wow. Now, can folks just pop into your facility? Like, do you have tours and is it open to the general public? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, well, people can't just pop in, unfortunately, because it's a working building. But we do give tours, so. If you find us on the internet, you send us an email. We set up, we do several tours a year. We bring in naturalist groups or other interested people who want a tour, and we can stick them in the wind tunnel and let them see some of our birds.
That would be. How many birds do you have in the facility, by the way?
Oh, it goes up and down depending on what project's going on, but we usually have a few hundred birds at a time.
That's very cool. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And where can people get more information? What's your website?
Our website is birds.uwo.ca.
Birds.uwo.ca. And they can go there and inquire about a tour and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Sounds fantastic, Scott. Appreciate you joining us and keep up the good work.
All right. Stay warm.
Oh, we will. Scott McDougall, Shackleton, Director at the Advanced Facility for Avian Research, University of Western Ontario, London. How's that?
That's another
place that maybe, you know, we can go to in our quest for breaks and holidays.
Forming
and
quite an itinerary here.
You know? Yeah. We can go to Merlin Park and maybe do some ice fishing for a couple of days.
That's right.
And then from there, we can go down to the Advanced Facility for Avian Research, University of Western Ontario in London.
That would be quite lovely.
You know?
Yeah.
And then maybe from there, we're not that far. We're in London at that point. Maybe we'll just go across the border, do some shopping. We'll go across the border shopping.
It's a date.
You know what I mean? Who needs Mexico and Jamaica and all those places that the rest of the crew is seemingly going to? Anyways, I just thought I'd throw that out there because you never. Now, I understand we're having problems getting a hold of Adrian, which is shocking. He's usually pretty good. But he does do a lot of traveling. He's always on the move.
We didn't get the memo. He's probably on vacation.
He's probably on vacation. And we're frantically trying to get our next guest.